Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I don't know if you need credit for what you do in your world. And I don't think that credit is necessarily what all athletes want. But I do believe that you get to a place where you want to feel the respect and admiration of not just your peers, but of everybody when you're participating in your business in a public forum, right? Like, look, does an Academy Award truly mean something to Leo or to Denzel? Like, Denzel Washington is an unbelievable actor. I think back of the Denzel movies, and I mean, I can name like 15 that I love. Honestly, I think my favorite Denzel characters are when he plays the bad guy. Right. That's actually, there's been a couple where he's played the bad guy, and I like those even more than when he plays the good guy, and he's played the good guy as well. He's got 2 Academy Awards, and Best Actor in Training Day was, you know, the one that, and that, like, does that mean that's the best role he's ever played? I don't think so. Now, Training Day was pretty awesome. I mean, he was an awesome bad guy in that movie. But he was good in Crimson Tide. He was amazing. Amazing. Right? Like, go back and look at some of the movies that he's been in. Was it Glory? He was ridiculously good in Glory. Like, I could go back through so many of his movies and go like, oh, he was good in that, he was good in that, he was good in that, good in that. You go through his IMDb and you're like, oh my goodness. Did he need the Academy Award for his peers to recognize him as one of the greatest actors of all time? Like, no, but it doesn't hurt. It feels like you're being recognized. It feels like you're being respected. It feels like everybody's like, yeah, he's one of the greatest ever. And I think that's kind of the search for Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was an MVP of the league in Oklahoma City. He led the league in scoring in Oklahoma City, I believe, 4 times. And as a, you know, as a game-changing 6'10", do-everything player, what did people say about him? Well, he didn't play that good a defense. He couldn't win a championship. He wasn't clutch. He, you know, you name all these things. So he went to Golden State where, like, look, we can say whatever we want about Golden State and their 73-win team. That team didn't win a championship. So nobody actually cares about regular season wins in the NBA if you don't win a championship, and they did not. They lost Harrison Barnes, and they upgraded. I think he went there for the respect that he believed came with winning a championship and doing so across from LeBron James. I watched the same games you did. He was the better player than LeBron. LeBron would have a good first half, and then would kind of run out of gas, and Kevin Durant would be the better player in the second half. Both of those series, he was the better player. Now, you can sit here and go, well, he had a better supporting cast. Maybe. Maybe it also fit him a little bit better. But he also defended better. He did everything a little bit better and efficiently. And I think that KD was like, well, you said I couldn't win. You said I wasn't better than LeBron. I did both. Didn't get the respect he wanted or thought. He felt like it came with winning a championship. And then when they needed him against Toronto, he came back early. And they were probably going to win the series because you had Kevin Durant. He was that sort of game changer. And then he got hurt. If you didn't see the difference in that series alone, you can't get it. Why would he go to Brooklyn? Because I think he's still chasing it. I think he's still chasing the respect, the admiration. And so now you have massive egos in James Harden and Kyrie Irving. Massive talents in James Harden and Kyrie Irving. But I'm going to give you a take, which I don't know if you've heard everywhere else. I've heard all sorts of things. But how about this one? If Kevin Durant can pull this one off, I actually think it should earn him the respect that he so very much deserves as a leader, as somebody dudes want to play with, right? Because that's really the key to what LeBron was able to do last year. LeBron still had some games in which athletically he didn't have it. They didn't beat the best team in the West. They didn't beat the best team in the East, but they did find a way to win a championship, and he probably wasn't the best basketball talent on his team. Anthony Davis was. But LeBron's leadership, ability to motivate guys, to get others to play above their level, and to stay together even in the bubble, that's being recognized as part of his greatness. If Kevin Durant can take the mercurial Kyrie Irving, who so far hasn't wanted to show up to work for 2 weeks and no one really knows why, and James Harden, who can't get to the NBA Finals outside of when he was a sixth man in Oklahoma City, has been the MVP of the league, but you can't win with him because he doesn't play defense and he doesn't get the foul calls in the postseason the way he's gotten the regular season. If Kevin Durant can figure out a way to get those two knuckleheads to fall in line and figure it out, and play for an inexperienced coach, how can you not respect him as the greatest player in the NBA currently? This is Charles Barkley, the Hall of Famer, on the Dan Patrick Show, explaining why he thinks it's going to go poorly in Brooklyn.
I don't think it's going to work. I thought they bought him in because they wasn't sure what was going to happen with Kyrie. They bought him in as an insurance policy. I think it's going to be fascinating watching those three guys play together, if they all play together. I mean, we have no idea what's going on with Kyrie, but no, I don't think it's going to work at all because those other guys don't bring in the diversity. Those other two guys, they are offensive players. There's only one basketball. I think it's got zero chance of working.
Doug Gottlieb Show here off Fox Sports Radio. I don't think it has 0% chance of working. I know, I have a feeling that there's a stronger likelihood of disaster than there is of success. And of course, I respect my good friend Charles Barkley. Who wouldn't? What he's saying, he's speaking from what we've all known. And look, Charles Barkley, people forget, at the end of his career, they tried to get together and win a championship in Houston, and it was a disaster. It was. I mean, part of it was they were just old and Charles Barkley broke down. But it's not for lack of trying. Go back and look at that Houston Rockets roster in 2006, 2007, right? They had Clyde the Glide, they had Akeem Olajuwon, and they had Charles Barkley. The problem was they were all in mostly their mid-30s, right? Mario Elie as well. They had Matt Maloney. Man, he's good. Eddie Johnson was 37. Kevin Willis. They had some great players. They were just all too old. Just all too old. And then later on, I think they added Scottie Pippen. And it still didn't work. So, you know, everybody thinks you had just great players. Now, the difference is these guys are younger. And I would say that while Kyrie Irving doesn't appear to be hungry for a championship, I do think he enjoys proving people wrong. And everybody thinks that he's wrong right now. James Harden hasn't shown the desire to truly buy in and get in shape and play defense, but there are a lot of naysayers right now. And Kevin Durant loves the idea. Maybe he doesn't love it and pushes back and uses burner accounts to tweet against it, but the truth is that what motivates him is the hatred or anger of others. It just simply does. So I look at it and I think, with so many people, because here's what's going to happen. If they win a championship, you're going to hear people, Nick Wright, Colin Cowherd, maybe even Barkley and others go, well, of course they won a championship. They got three superstar players. But I want you to take a snapshot of right now and take a little straw poll and try and figure out exactly why we would have that commentary when right now we're so many people are saying it has no chance of working. They're not saying it might work, it might not work, or even what I'm saying, which is there's a lot of things going against it. It's more likely not to get a lot. Because I look and I'm like, so who do you like, Boston? I don't love them. Who do you like, The Sixers, I don't love them. Who do you like? The Heat? They don't have the dudes. Not going to happen. I know they won on defense last year in fortitude and toughness or whatever. Don't see it happening. Like, I kind of think it probably works. I think there's a likelihood of it not working because of chemistry issues, and no one knows about Kyrie Irving. Plus, Kyrie's always hurt. Kevin Durant's been hurt a good amount. These guys are, you know, getting a little bit, they're not long in the tooth, but they're not spring chickens anymore. But if they all get there healthy and they can get Kyrie in the fold, I kind of think this could be Kevin Durant's shining moment that he's been looking for. It's like we all expect Kevin Durant to have to take a team, a ragtag team of nobodies, and get to the finals and lose the way that Iverson did and LeBron did, and somehow that's going to be something that will change our mind. It wouldn't be. This will.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
The Jaguars are finalizing a deal with Urban Meyer to be the next head coach. Jacksonville Jaguars are working on a deal to bring in the three-time national championship winning coach to be their next head coach. That from NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport and Tom Pelissero. So there's a lot of reasons why I think it could succeed. There's a lot of reasons why I think it could fail. Right? You got a bunch. You got a dearth of draft picks. You got more money than anybody else to spend in terms of the cap. So free agency. And I think, and look, this is more opinion based upon hypotheses and guesses than it is fact. But there's so many NFL players that grew up in Florida, in Georgia, in the South. And look, Miami's a good time. New Orleans a good time. But there are also places, Tampa's a good time. But there are also places where guys are like, look, that's where I want to live. You know, they just do. I mean, obviously, the Cowboys are a more glamorous organization, right? The Cowboys are a glamour organization. There are some teams that are more fun to play for. If you're an offensive player, you want to play for Kansas City, right? But in terms of places you want to live, there's lots of dudes like, man, Jacksonville, relatively inexpensive compared to a lot of NFL cities. And it's a place where a lot of these guys either grew up, lived, went to school, comfortable in. So you factor all those things in, and look, they're going to play half their games in London eventually. I think his relationships in recruiting and in coaching brings automatic respect, like all of those things. But let's not kid ourselves. Let's not kid ourselves. You go and look at the great quarterbacks in the NFL, and what do they all have in common? Okay, so Andrew Luck was the last can't-miss product, right? Last can't-miss product. Andrew Luck only played 6 years in the National Football League. He won 11, 11, 11. The year he got hurt, they were 2-5. 8-10 regular season football games. The point is that, and Andrew Luck played at times, Ryan Gregson was the GM for a good portion of that, and he was among the worst general managers in the history of the sport. Give me a quarterback who came into any sort of situation. Do you want Peyton Manning? Right? Because the Colts before Peyton Manning were an abject disaster. Peyton Manning won 3 games his first year. 13, 10, 6, 10, 12, 12, 14, 12, 13, 12, 14, 10, 13, 13, 12. And even when he couldn't throw a football, he went 7-2. The point is that, yes, how they construct this team, offensive line, skill position players, defensive line, type of offense they run, all these things do matter. Urban Meyer's leadership, relationship with his players, his coaching staff, all matters. But you know what matters most? They're taking Trevor Lawrence. If Trevor Lawrence can play, they'll be fine. It will be a success. Right? Like, do we think Nick Saban doesn't know what the hell he's doing? Do you guys think for 1 second that Nick Saban is an idiot? Okay. So with that in mind, what derailed him in his only stop in which he wasn't successful? Anybody? It's quarterback play, right? Famously wanted Drew Brees, couldn't get Drew Brees cleared by their doctors to sign the deal. He had Gus Frerotte and Joey Harrington as his quarterback. By the way, Nick Saban, who we view as an abject disaster, right? We view him as an abject disaster. The year before he got there, Dave Wannstedt got fired before the season was over. They won 4 games. His first year, they won 9. His second year, after they passed on Drew Brees, he won 6. It wasn't a disaster. It didn't work. He didn't have enough time to make it work. And he took a better job. For Urban Meyer, in order to work, all the other stuff matters on some level. Little things become big things. But the thing that matters most is if Trevor Lawrence is anywhere near what he's supposed to be, then they'll be fine. And then, you know, by year 3, you could have lofty expectations. What happened with the Cleveland Browns? Like, is Baker Mayfield great? No. But they've been drafting in the top 5 for so long, eventually you just acquire so many assets, you're going to have dudes. Same thing happened to Buffalo for so long. And I got these tweets from people who are like, oh, you use the Buffalo Bills and their drafting as a reason why, when look at how few of their first round picks are actually playing for them now. Okay, but you don't just draft early in the first round. You draft early in the second round. You draft early in the third round. You draft early in the fourth round. You draft early in the fifth round. Right? So if you do these things well, you load up with young talent and your quarterback is on a rookie contract, you're probably going to be pretty good. Right? Go and look. Where did the Buffalo Bills get their running back? Third round, Devin Singletary. Right? Dawson Knox. I liked him. Right? Third round pick. I mean, just go and look at all the guys that play for them now and how many of them were drafted. I mean, some really good players taken at times in the draft. You load up on the depth, and yeah, then they went out and moved some draft capital and got Stephon Diggs. And all of that is cool. Had they not hit on Josh Allen, it wouldn't have all come together. So we'll talk our way in circles about Urban Meyer, and we'll all say, and I'm just as guilty of it as anybody, for saying that Urban Meyer, you know, has to remember in the pros, it's about everybody else. In college, it's about you. Like, all of those things are important. All those things matter. But if you don't have the quarterback, you're fighting an uphill battle. It'll make you look like an inferior coach if you miss on a quarterback. But if you hit on a quarterback, you're going to win. You might not win a Super Bowl, but you win enough to be gainfully employed. So do I think it'll work? I do. As long as Trevor Lawrence is anywhere near as good as Trevor Lawrence is viewed to be as a prospect.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Randy Mueller joins us now on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Randy, thanks so much for taking time. You were at the helm in Miami, but they hired Nick Saban, and Saban had control over the roster. So, you know, some of this is everybody pulling in the same direction. For like full clarity, what was that like when Nick Saban was hired and you're the general manager of the Dolphins?
You've hit on some good stuff here, Doug, no question. Actually, Nick had the job and Rick Spielman was the GM. And when he made the change, Nick hired me. So I went with the general manager's title, but let's make no bones about it. Nick was the GM, right? So I was the personnel guy. I think the biggest thing when you talk about a guy like Urban Meyer with no experience in the NFL, he's going to have to surround himself with some people that he can trust. It's different. The NFL is very different in that there are so many decisions that are made every day that one guy, especially if it's the head coach, I don't believe he can make all those decisions. And I think that's the way it is. It just, there's too many roster moves. There's too many things we have to do on a daily basis, whether it comes to contracts and planning for the future and the whole bit. It's just not like college where you can have 85 scholarships and you just worry about injuries, and that's all. So it'll be interesting to see who he surrounds himself with. He's going to have some people that he can trust and empower to make some decisions, and that'll be the I think that will go as far as anything with how this goes for him at the NFL level.
It's a fascinating discussion because, and Randy, you can speak to this because you're still so inside football, is I think Saban learned from his failures there, right? Because what I've been told of Alabama is he has the biggest staff of anybody in college football. And now, especially over the last 6-7 years with some of the hires he's made in the offensive side of the ball, he's really empowered those guys to make their own decision. Now I will grant you, that's not like what it is in the NFL, but it does embody a guy who suddenly now is not going to try and be hands-on everything because you don't know everything. You don't have the time for everything. Is that fair that even Nick Saban, if he would go back and redo it, he would probably sprinkle around some of the responsibilities?
Oh, I think no question. Again, it's a great point. And Nick did that with us. When Nick was the head coach at LSU, I happened to be the GM of the Saints. So we kind of knew of each other. We knew of each other's background. And when we got together in Miami, we worked really good together because of that. And again, he empowered me to do certain things. He knew I had been around and had some success in the league. So I think that was a good move for me, in that it let me kind of tweak a little bit of what he wanted to do, and we worked well together. That's really what the NFL is about. To me, it doesn't matter if the coach is in charge, if the GM's in charge. It's about working together. And I've worked under coaches, I've worked even with coaches, and I've been the coach's boss. And to be honest with you, if you're not lockstep on all the decisions, I always said, hey, let's pick a different lane. So I think that's what you'll have to find. That's where Urban's going to have to come around a little bit. He seems to me, and I don't know the guy, but he seems to me like very controlling with everything he does. I think that is the part that'll be hardest for him, is to loosen those reins, like you say. And I agree, Nick did it. I think Nick still does it at Alabama. In fact, I'm pretty sure he uses the same system we used at Miami to evaluate and to stack your criteria on players.
Randy Mueller joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. All this said, if you guys had figured out the quarterback situation, the outcome would have been different. I mean, like, and I pointed out to people, like, do people know that the year before Nick got there, they won 4 games in Miami, won 9 games his first year. And, you know, like, you never figured out. It's not rocket science. Like, look, there's some things that can keep you from making the playoffs or making a run in the playoffs or winning a Super Bowl in terms of the other decisions you make. But if I use that as, if Trevor Lawrence is as good or close to as good as people think he is, they'll be just fine. Will they win a Super Bowl? There's a lot of other things that have to go their way and decisions they have to make. But in terms of just winning and being above water, if he's good, they're good. Fair?
Fair. I think they'll have a chance, that's for sure. That's the hardest one to solve. That's the answer to the Rubik's Cube, is finding the quarterback. And like you said, when we were together in Miami, we had a couple choices to make, and one was, you know, we kind of selected Drew Brees to be our guy, and then the medical information came in and didn't allow that decision to happen. So they're not going to have that hurdle to overcome in Jacksonville. I think Trevor Lawrence is a unanimous pick as number one. I don't think there's a bunch of consensus building that has to go on. I think it's going to be an easy choice for them. And, yes, that will set the table for them to have some success. But they're going to have to surround him with some people as well, as you mentioned.
Randy Mueller joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. What about the balance? And as you pointed out, like, look, you've been with the Chargers, you've been with the Saints, you've been with so many of these teams. Now we're looking around and you're trying to find hires. And a lot of it, as you pointed out, is about working with other people. I think the fans think, oh, that offense is good. That guy calls plays for that offense. I want that guy calling plays for my offense. He should be our head coach. The same thing for defense. In terms of hiring a head coach, how do you personally go through evaluating what the right guy is for the job?
Well, first of all, you've got to set your own criteria as to what you think is important. And most places, I would say they're looking for a leader of men first and foremost. And then you've got to find the existing player strengths and weaknesses to kind of match with what you're bringing in. You don't get to build a team from scratch when you make a change at the coaching level or at the GM level. You have a salary cap and you have a roster in front of you. So you may get to roll over a third of that, Doug, but the other two thirds are something you're going to have to live with. So you obviously want the match to come that works well with the guys that are there and has a system in place when he gets there that matches some of the strengths that the players you currently have on the roster have exhibited. So it's a melding of, yes, a culture and a new change, but at the same time, like I say, you're going to have 60% of these guys that have been with you before. So it's a fine line. Some people have more success doing it than others. I do know this, that you can't go wrong keeping good players and figuring out a way to use them. And I would hope that these guys, when they find these jobs, whether it's a GM job or a head coach job, they don't run off all the good players just to get their own.
Yeah, that's the worst. And people do it in college too. With it. Well, wait till we get in my own guys. Like, you know, you have good, you have players somebody believed in there. That's a that's always in. I tell you a quick story. Okay, there's a that I had a friend who he was at Notre Dame as before, way before I got there, and it's really interesting. John McLeod called him in when John McLeod got the job, and he's like, "Look, you're a great kid. You got a good family. But I'm just going to tell you, you probably never play here. So you can stay on scholarship and compete, but my expectations are you're never going to play here." That guy ended up starting for 3 or 4 years, he's been a head coach in college, he's an assistant coach in college, right? Like, it does. Yep. So sometimes you prove the guys wrong based upon whatever evaluation that they had. You got to come in with an open mind, I guess, is probably an easy way to put it. Fair?
No doubt about it. I think sometimes in the NFL, people that come into these jobs end up running off players that are really good, like you say, and then they spend 2 or 3 years trying to replace them, and guess what? They're just as good as the guys, no better than the guy they ran off. So if they would have kept a good player to start with and added to them, they'd be much further down the road in setting up a winning team.
What do you do if you're Pittsburgh? They fired their OC and their offensive line coach. You got Big Ben, but you have a limited lifespan on Big Ben with the Steelers. How do you manage that you're going to have to develop an offense in the future, but you also want to get the most out of Big Ben in the short term?
Yeah, that's a hard one. I think the decision to dump the OC, Doug, tells me that it may be done time for Ben as well. I don't know that they're going to want to, or Ben maybe want to learn a new offense as to, you know, in his last year in the league. The other thing is that cap number sitting there at $41 million, that's a hard one. And you really can't have him on your team at that number, but the only way to reduce it is to renegotiate it, which is push money off, and that doesn't make sense for the Steelers either. So I see this being a kind of a math problem. The only way he stays is if he takes a lot less money, and I don't see that happening. I mean, you saw Big Ben on the bench after the game. I don't think these tears were any more, it could be any more emotional. He was done. He felt it in his own mind.
Okay, so how does it actually work, though? I know that cap number doesn't just magically go away. You can't go like, well, he retired, so we're good here. That's not how it works. You know, you kick the can down the road, but eventually it's going to hurt you. How does it actually work against the cap if he retires?
Well, it works better for them if he's not there. They'll still have some cap charge that they've pushed off. And really, it's a matter of, if you go buy something and you pay cash for it, you pay up and the bill's done. But if you put it on a credit card and keep spreading it out, eventually you got to pay. And that's what happens with a lot of these frontline quarterbacks, is when they renegotiate a contract, they're just pushing cap dollars off into the future. They don't go away. You don't get that as a loan and it gets forgiven at the end of the day. It's not how the cap works. You've got to pay the piper at some point. So I think it's going to be hard if the cap's $175 million and Ben's taking up $41. That doesn't give you much of a chance to build a team around it.
Yeah, I don't know how, but they have so many different issues. What about Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts and Philadelphia? Okay, let me play for you. This is Troy Aikman on Michael Irvin's podcast talking about a conversation he had with Doug Peterson.
I reached out to Doug Peterson yesterday when I heard the news, and what I gathered it came down to was a difference of opinion as to how they were moving forward at the quarterback position is what I sensed. I sensed that, you know, here Jeff Lurie, the owner, has paid a lot of money to Carson Wentz, and they're on the hook with him. They can't get out of that contract, you know, right away. It's my belief that Doug Peterson felt that Jalen Hurts was probably the quarterback going forward, and how does that mesh?
So if it did come down to, I think it's Jalen Hurts, and the Eagles are like, we think it's Wentz, plus we have all this money tied up into Wentz, What's your breakdown of the breakdown, the relationship between a coach who wins the Super Bowl and Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie?
Well, my guess is that Doug Peterson was involved when they extended Wentz's contract and got him up to the $35 million a year level he was on. For them to change course, and really, it comes down to, you know, you've committed this money. I just don't think he's going anywhere. You just are boxed in. I think the biggest thing that happened with Doug is that, more than anything, is he couldn't fix Wentz. That's the problem. Wentz had to be fixed. That was their number one issue, and he proved he couldn't do it. Maybe he didn't want to, because maybe he did want to play Hurts, like Troy said. So I'm not sure how that works out in the end, but I do know that Wentz really financially can't go anywhere. So we have to fix him. And apparently, if Doug didn't want to fix him, that made it easy. We got to move on.
I said this, and look, you've run an NFL team, so I have a tremendous amount of respect for your perspective. But Jalen Hurts is a second-round pick. Okay, he got a chance to start. He wasn't let's not act like he was tearing up. He wasn't Alex Smith on Monday Night Football against Arizona, perfect game, right? Like, he's 7-20. He dirts a fourth down ball where he has an open wide receiver. And they make a change, which was a controversial thing. And he's seen mouthing once on the sideline, it's BS. Another sideline, he's sitting there, he says, it's just not right. Now, look, I understand he's a rookie and he's a kid. The difference to me would be, one of the reasons people like Jalen Hurts was, at least outwardly, he handled the Alabama thing really, really well. And Tua handled the Alabama thing really, really well. But he's been in these things before. You can't do that. Undermines everything. If you're, no matter how upset Carson Wentz may be, and I didn't love that Carson Wentz through his agent, you know, I want out of here, you know, I want to be traded. But that is the way that you handled it, as opposed to Hurts. I said you cut him. It may be a little harsh, but it's more what it does to undermine everything that's taking place, because he had to have been told that Sudfeld was going to get a look at some point in time during the game. Am I crazy for having those sentiments?
No, I don't think so. I definitely think his reaction was like pouring gas on the fire a little bit. But I also can't condone the way Wentz handled it either, in that, you know, by going to his agent, he's trying to undermine some things as well. So there was a lot of agendas at work, and when you say Jeffrey Lurie, you know, wanted him to play Wentz and fix Wentz, that opinion probably was helped along by the GM, Howie Roseman, as well. So they were probably lockstep on the decision that we're going to play Wentz no matter what. It all became a little bit of airing your laundry on national TV. It was reality TV, and I definitely think it hurt Doug's credibility in the locker room the way it played out, and that's a cultural thing. I felt it was risky to make that move to pull Hurts out and yet have the rest of your guys questioning, what are we doing? Are we even trying to win? That's a cultural thing that those veteran players did not want to see that. And that hurt Doug, no doubt.
Do you think what's your evaluation of Tua one season in?
I have the same concerns that I had coming out. And I like Tua. I thought he was a first-round pick. I thought he exhibited all the tools you'd like. I was only worried about his size and durability. And that's something you'll never know. And I thought there were times this year he played really good. You can't underestimate his accuracy, his delivery. Everything fundamentally sound. But that pocket shrinks on everybody, Doug, and he's not a big guy. And I thought when the pocket shrunk on him a little bit, it showed his lack of size and, in some cases, durability. And that's something he's just going to have to build on. He's going to have to gain a few pounds and be more comfortable in that pocket. It's not for everybody, but if you want to make $35 million a year in the league, that's what you're going to have to do, stand in there and take it.
I guess here's my thing. I understand the accuracy. I was waiting for a wow play or two. You know? I know he's athletic enough, but not a great athlete. He's got a good arm, but there's not like a plus arm. He's accurate, but and now Chan Gailey's obviously going to take the fall for it. Is that something you think changes from season one to season two, that we see some wow plays?
I don't know. It might if they increase their speed on the perimeter. I don't see receivers that are stretching fields to make wow plays, but you can also say that the kid kind of refused to throw it downfield too. Yeah. I just don't think he was comfortable. And I don't think that's something that'll get better. I think, will he be better in year two? Without a doubt. Will he be a top five, top 10 quarterback in the league? I don't know. Time will tell.
Randy, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you joining us. You had incredible insight. Anytime we have you on, you're always welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good enough, Doug. Good talking to you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live. And now...
This is Nick Wright explaining why he would take Lamar Jackson over Josh Allen this weekend.
I am insulted on Lamar Jackson's behalf here because I feel like I'm in the minority saying, wow, I'll take the defending unanimous MVP. Lamar has been extraordinary since the moment he took over for Joe Flacco. Josh Allen's been extraordinary for 1 year. So who would I rather have? This isn't a stinging indictment on Josh Allen. I'll save that for Monday after they lose. But right now, to me, it's no question. I'd rather have Lamar. Lamar is the guy I would rather have. Lamar is the guy that scares me more. And Lamar is the guy that I think everyone would agree has less weaponry around him in order to fully be able to display his talents throwing
That's
the football.
True.
So, Brandon, I'm going to go with Lamar.
All right. There's a bunch loaded in there. Now, I want to start. I'm going to agree with Nick. I would take Lamar. The second part is, I think what Lamar has been and who he is in comparison to Josh Allen previously has nothing to do with it, anything. Because in truth, Josh Allen has been better this year than Lamar has been this year. He just has. Lamar was better last year than Josh Allen was last year. But there have been times, even last year, which Lamar wasn't great. Mid-season against the Kansas City Chiefs, he was awful. It's really not good. He was bad in the playoffs. We don't stop counting when you're bad in the playoffs both years. We don't stop counting those games. It's all part of it. Where I would think I would take Lamar is he does have more experience in playoff games, and I think he does have more experience in higher-level football games when you go back to college as well. So I think the attention to detail that it takes is important, and I think that though Lamar has his, they both have flaws. They're not perfect players. They're both guys that can continue to improve and impress with their level of improvement. I think that Lamar has a team and a system which is as well designed for what he does and who he is as any in the league, maybe even ever. Now, the part I will take a huge issue with is this nonsense I hear about the Ravens needing more or better wide receivers. Okay, you're just going to have to resign yourself to the, that's never going to happen. When you have a quarterback who runs 20 times a game, who throws better inside the number, do you know where wide receivers don't want to catch the ball? Psst, inside the numbers. Do you know why? That's where the big guys that hit you really hard and shorten your career are. Right, they drafted Hollywood Brown in the first round. And oh yeah, by the way, they also drafted a tight end in the first round. Same year they drafted same year they drafted Lamar. Only he got sent chop packing. Why? Because he wasn't getting the ball enough. Like, here's the biggest issue. If you run it 20 times a game with your quarterback, and you run it 20 times a game with your running back, and then you run it 10 times a game with some other form of running back, fullback, you know, jet sweep, whatever, you're going to shorten the number of throws you have. Then when you throw out their two tight ends, you're going to throw to them the football because they're bigger targets for a fairly inaccurate quarterback. Then you got Hollywood Brown who has the speed to potentially be number one. You're not going to, where are you going to, why would you go waste an asset there? If you're going to have five catches a game, you know, do the math, 5 times 16, you know, that's not enough for the elite wide receivers. They want the football. They want to be thrown to 120 times a year. And you're not going to spend that much money. So I think he's got plenty of weaponry. I do think he's the better guy to bet on. But this nonsense about needing another A1 wide receiver is a joke.